Good morning, is it Ms. Paul? Oh, I'm sorry. I'm looking at the wrong case here. Ms. Govers, of course. Good morning to you. And Ms. Dugan Pemberton, good morning to you. Do either council have any questions before we begin? Very good. If you were not present when you were presenting, please take your face mask off so that the court can hear and understand what you have to say. Justice Miller-Lerman is on WebEx. Everybody else is here in the courtroom. Ms. Govertz, you may approach and you may proceed.
Good morning. May it please the court, I'm Elizabeth Govertz for the appellant, Warren Evans. I'd like, if I may, to start with the procedural pleading issue first. The trial court held that the plaintiff's res ipsa claim failed as a matter of law because Evans alleged specific allegations of negligence in his complaint. Let's start first by pointing to our liberal notice pleading rules. In Nebraska, Rule 6-1108 allows for a party to state two or more claims. They can be inconsistent. They can be independent. And the failure of one of those claims does not relate to the sufficiency of the others. So if we look at our rules of pleadings,
have we since the rules of pleading were changed, reiterated the rule about res ipsa and specific allegations of negligence?
Thank you for that question, Judge. I think that is the issue here.
The question was, have we spoken to it?
We have not.
Since that date?
We have not spoken to specifically the pleading issue. There's a 2017 case, the Anderson versus Union Pacific case, but that was a different issue there. That was a case where the case had gone all the way to trial, and I believe it was a chair that had failed, and the plaintiff ended up proving through expert testimony exactly how the bolt failed, and it was a failure to maintain the chair, and the judge nonetheless instructed the jury both on res ipsa and on the negligence allegations. And you can see how in that particular case, with respect to once evidence has already come in and the fact finder has the case, you can see how they're inconsistent and confusing in that particular case. But with respect to the rules of pleadings, no. And I think the latest case is 1998. And if I remember, maybe even 91. So yes, I think it is time to revisit that, particularly in light of the fact that this court has said over and over and over again that res ipsa is a rule of evidence and not a rule of substantive law. And therefore res ipsa is procedural. And this is the general agreement of all jurisdictions, and different jurisdictions across the country have different rules about pleading res ipsa and negligence. I think that this case can best be answered in a case that I have cited in my brief numerous times, but never discussed thoroughly. And that's that Lange case, which is a federal diversity case. And it's interesting because the judge has to decide in that case, what is res ipsa? Is it an evidentiary rule or is it a claim? Is it a separate claim? And if it is a separate claim, then it's not contrary to our rules of pleadings to plead both res ipsa and specific allegations of negligence, because we're allowed to do that. And this was a federal case, so they were saying under the federal rules, it's procedural, So you could do whatever you want to essentially in the pleadings. If it's a rule of evidence, what do you even need to plead it? Why do you plead it? Why do we plead it? I plead it all the time, but is it a separate claim of act, a cause of action, a separate claim? And I think that now the court does have to speak to that. Now we have.
I beg your pardon. Is it your argument that the trial judge erred as a matter of law because the trial judge stated that a party cannot plead both negligence and res ipsa? Is that the issue?
Yes, that is the issue. It's contrary to our rules of pleading, and it doesn't make any sense anyway, because the defense is the same regardless of.
So if this court were to conclude that one can plead both and then let the evidence take it where it may, and then decide, the trial court can decide what to submit to the jury. So if we were to agree with you, in this case, did the trial judge make any errors with respect to the ruling on the substance of res ipsa? Did the trial court address the merits? Did the trial court say plaintiff's evidence failed in any respect?
Yes, she did say that. And thank you, because I would also like to argue that issue as well. Res ipsa, as we know, involves specifically what was the issue here, that the occurrence is not one which in the ordinary course of things happens in the absence of negligence. And that's the issue of fact in this case. We have expert witness, Dr. Scott Swanson, who is an experienced board certified orthopedic surgeon. He treats and diagnoses infections. He has sat on hospital infection control committees. He has acquired a lot of experience and expertise in infection care over his 20 years of practice. He performs hundreds of injections a year. And he specifically said, this is not the type of thing that in the ordinary course of things happens in the absence of negligence. And if res ipsa applies to our facts, then summary judgment is not appropriate in this case. And our proof, there was an issue of fact as to that very issue.
Did the district court conclude that other testimony contradicted that?
Yes, she did.
Do you want to address that?
Yes. That testimony was either misunderstood or taken out of context, because the question is that was asked is, do you agree that if a scalpel or a needle is pushed through the skin, that it was something like there's some possibility or potential risk of infection? And his answer to that question was yes. Then the counsel goes on to ask him lots of questions about infection prep then. And then his answer after that was, when the question was asked, do you agree that if the sterile prep was done, that there's still a possibility of infection? And he said, no, if the sterile prep was done, there shouldn't be any microbes left on the skin, at least not enough.
How much deference, if any, do we have to give to the trial court's determination on this issue?
Well, she weighed the evidence, and this is a motion for summary judgment, and it's not the opportunity to decide the issues. It's just whether there were enough, whether there was enough evidence to proceed to trial.
So we give no deference to her determination?
Well, In a motion for summary judgment, the evidence is viewed in the light most favorable to the non-moving party. If there is a question of fact as to this ultimate issue, then it goes to the jury. And weighing the evidence is inappropriate on a motion for summary judgment.
So to return to the whether there is an inconsistency or not, that your understanding is the first comment that your expert makes is it's possible that there's an infection anytime there's an injection. When he's saying that, he's saying, well, it's possible because it's possible sometimes the sterile prep isn't done correctly.
Right. There's a hypothetical risk out there anytime that the skin is penetrated.
But then later, his testimony is the only time an infection will occur is if the sterile prep, there's a breach in the standard of care for the sterilization.
That's right. If it wasn't done right, then there shouldn't be an infection. And just, I realize I'm out of time, but we are not required in these types of cases to rule out all other hypothetical possibilities for this injury beyond a reasonable doubt. We have to prove more likely than not that this was a result of an infection. And anecdotally, I may note that the incidence of infection, as far as we know, is zero after these types of injections, because in the two biggest and busiest orthopedic practices in Nebraska, they've never seen this before. So Dr. Swanson says that over and over again, in my 20 years of practice, I have never seen it. And so he clearly was talking about, you never say never, but what he was saying was, sure, there's a possibility, but you account for that possibility by sterilizing the skin, essentially. I have overshot my time. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Dugan Pemberton, you may approach and you may proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors. Thanks for having me here, counsel. May it please the court. I am honored to represent Freedom Healthcare in this medical malpractice case. And before getting into the time-consuming piece that we've been discussing, there are some other issues that show why summary judgment was proper here that I'd like to at least get out of the way that are independent of that. With respect to the allegation of negligence, there were, I believe it was 7 specific allegations of negligence alleged. That Freedom Healthcare failed to properly supervise its employees, failed to properly train, failed to take appropriate steps to ensure the equipment was sterile, failed to use proper sterile technique, failed to appropriately perform the procedure in question, failed to properly monitor the plaintiff's condition, and failed to provide prompt and immediate follow-up care. During Dr. Swanson's deposition, who was the expert for the plaintiff appellant, we very tediously went through each of those claims. And each time he had no criticisms, none.
I beg your pardon. I have kind of 2 different questions, and perhaps I'm doing you a disservice. But the allegation of failing to use proper sterile technique, do you claim that is a specific description of the instruments of the problem, or is that a more general statement? You think that's specific?
These were the itemized allegations of negligence, is I guess what I'm trying to put forward. Now,
there's not a specific allegation. For example, the practitioner dropped the needle and took it off the floor and nevertheless used it. That might be very specific. Or in Anderson, you know, the bolt had these specific failings. You think this is specific? Is that your position?
I think it's itemized, and then the questioning at Dr. Swanson's deposition would have ferreted out the reasons why he thought that the technique wasn't done correctly, but that
well,
never.
Well, in that and with regard to that, the questions were, do you know if the healthcare has a protocol? No. Do they have a check? They have a checklist, a computerized checklist, right? Do you know what it consists of? It's a list of questions. So if the question is, do you have a criticism of the protocol? And if his answer is, I don't know the protocol, so I can't criticize it, is that what you're identifying as an inconsistency with his later opinion?
That's part of it. Dr. Swanson was also provided an opportunity to give any of his criticisms, so he didn't have to limit it to those questions. Do you have criticisms of these itemized issues? And he did not. That was early on. And then later in his deposition upon cross-examination is when he said that something had to have gone wrong with the sterile technique. So as we look to the negligence claim, it fails as a matter of law because there's no issue of fact here. There's no criticism that's brought along. Dr. Brown, who is also an orthopedic surgeon, he practices in Omaha, and he does a lot of joint injections similar to the kind that Mr. Evans had done at Freedom Healthcare. Dr. Swanson testified that while he does some types of injections, he does not do these injections. He has some partners who do them, but he doesn't discuss them with them. He doesn't review any professional literature on them. He doesn't know the infection rate. He's never looked it up. He's never asked anybody about the infection rate.
I beg your pardon. So do those questions mean he wasn't an expert, or do they go to the weight of his opinion?
Well, I would argue under the, when we get to the res ipsa loquitur component, under the three situations that are limited where res ipsa loquitur occurs or is allowed, that he does not rise to the level of expert because he doesn't do them. He doesn't read about them, and he admitted he doesn't know the infection rate. If you don't know what the infection rate is, or if there even is an infection rate, how can you possibly allege that an infection can only have occurred with negligence? How can you do that? Doctor.
So I beg your pardon. So the question is how to prove a negative.
It is, but because res ipsa loquitur on the three scenarios where it's allowed is so very tight, I think you can prove a negative by the questions where if we're asking for the third situation, I believe is what you're referring to, where there's an expert in an esoteric field that offered proof that created an inference of negligence. Dr. Swanson is an orthopedic surgeon. His specialty that he advertises and testified about is to foot and ankle. He doesn't generally care for knees. He happened to be on call the weekend that Mr. Evans came into the hospital, and he then transferred after he washed out Mr. Evans' knee. He then transferred his care to one of his partners that does specialize in knees. I think that's a key piece that he's saying he's not an expert in knees. And then he doesn't do this type of injection, but he didn't even read about it before he put out expert witness. I mean, I may be a litigator and I work in malpractice, but the last case that was just up here on a probate contest, I certainly wouldn't be able to put myself out as an expert in that field. I would at least read about it first. So I think that Dr. Swanson, while I'm sure he's a wonderful physician, this was not within his area to put himself out as an expert, especially if he doesn't read it. So on the negligence theory, they did not bring forward a medical expert to show that negligence occurred, and so summary judgment was proper on the negligence theory. On the res ipsa loquitur, with respect to the three situations from the McCall case, the first situation is it has to be so palpably negligent that the negligence can be inferred. And that's something like a retained sponge or an operation on the wrong side of the body. Here, Mr. Evans presented for bilateral knee injection, so we don't have the wrong site and nothing was left inside. So that number one does not apply. The second situation is that the general experience and observation of mankind suggest that such infections could only occur as a result of negligence. Well, here, Dr. Swanson and Dr. Brown both agreed you cannot sterilize the skin. Even with the best of prep, you eliminate all possible bacteria as much as you can, but you can't guarantee that the skin is sterilized. That doesn't mean that you did the prep wrong. That doesn't mean that you proceeded with no prep whatsoever. Despite the best work trying to clear the skin with this, with an approved skin prep, you could still have bacteria present. He also agreed that anytime the skin is breached, bacteria could be introduced, and that's what happened here. Bacteria had to have gotten in and an infection resulted, but it didn't result because of negligence. Dr. Brown testified that there is a broad range for the infection rate for knee injections or joint injections. And he said, you know, there was a study out of the UK where 250, I believe, physicians were asked what their experience with joint injections had been, if they were aware of any joint injection infections. 12% were. 12% were aware of this being a problem. So it doesn't have to be common to be possible without negligence. Dr. Brown had seen one in his early in his career. I believe he was a resident at the time when he'd seen it, and he'd heard of others. But he does read the literature, and he is aware that there's an actual infection rate. He said the range, depending on what study you're reading, is anywhere from 1 in 3,000 to 1 in 50,000. So we don't know exactly what it is. We know it's not a very common thing, but we know it happens.
Is it your position that the reference in our res ipsa case law to an expert in an esoteric field sets a different threshold of expertise than just the ordinary expert witness standard?
Thank you for that question. I don't think it necessarily sets a separate standard, but what I do think is you have to have at least a baseline. When you admit that you don't even look at the literature and you don't know what the infection rate is, how can you say an infection's impossible unless there's negligence if you don't even bother to look? To me, it seems like these are personal anecdotes. He maybe hasn't seen it in his experience, but he didn't look either before he put himself out as an expert. I see I'm out of time. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal?
No, Your Honor.
There is no time for rebuttal. Counsel, thank you very much for your presentations. You are excused, and the court will go on to the next case of the day, which is Spratt versus Creed Carrier Corporation.